plenty to talk about this week.
Yep, we got some new kids on the block in state government.
And they all say they've got the right stuff.
I, Joshua L. Call.
I, Mandela Barnes.
I, Tony Evers.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And will faithfully and impartially discharge
the duties of the Office of Attorney General.
As Lieutenant Governor.
Governor. So help me God.
That, of course, was sound from Monday's inauguration ceremonies here in Wisconsin.
Yep, we've got some new politicians in the Capitol and some new calls for bipartisanship to go along with them.
And we got some new fights, too, potentially some that would end up in court.
Well, let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
Thanks for hanging tough. Let's start the podcast. And that music you heard there underpinning the sounds of Wisconsin's inauguration this week was the 1998 single from New Kids on the Block, You Got It, parentheses, The Right Stuff. What happened this week?
Well, this was the inauguration ceremony for not only our new statewide officers in Wisconsin. We also had two different inauguration ceremonies for the Senate and the Assembly. But Laurel, this was your first inauguration for the statewide offices in the rotunda of the Capitol, a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk us through it?
It was my inaugural inauguration.
Whoa, yeah. Good point.
See what you did there.
So, you know, it kind of reminded me of, interestingly, it reminded me the most of the State of Education address.
Because it was in the rotunda.
Because it was in the rotunda.
And it was Tony Evers.
And it was Tony Evers. So maybe this isn't funny at all.
I think we traced the roots of this, actually.
And there were choirs, school choirs, and, you know, big audiences that went all the way. More people, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, that's what it was reminiscent of for me. That's my hot take.
So put some people in the rotunda, put Tony Evers there and some choirs.
Yeah, and that's
the event.
There it is.
Those are the elements,
there
right?
There it is, yeah. It was really interesting. Lots of pomp and circumstance. There was a whole hour of musical lead up to the speeches. And it was interesting because I felt like the audience wanted to be maybe a little bit more political than perhaps some of the speakers were in their speeches.
I don't
know if we want to get into this nitty gritty.
Sure.
Yeah, but
I mean, it was a Democratic audience. It's not a Democratic event. You're there to swear in officers of Wisconsin that are going to be running state government for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of their friends and family, because we have five statewide office holders who are Democrats, people there to support them and to watch the show are Democrats. And so, yeah, you got a lot of energy from that audience whenever somebody would mention something. Or what struck out to me was just when they introduced Justice Shirley Abrahamson, who will be leaving the court after decades there. She got a huge round of applause.
Yeah, a liberal justice.
Yeah, so did Rebecca Dallet, another liberal justice who was just elected to the court.
There was kind of an ebb and flow of enthusiasm for – there were five previous governors in attendance, and the response to them could be linked fairly directly to their party affiliation.
A little bit, yeah. Jim Doyle got a big round of applause there, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, Democrat.
Scott Walker, less so.
Right, there you go. And I think carrying out their point there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and, I felt like Governor Evers' speech – certainly had some points, where he's talking about the change he wants to bring and things like that. But it wasn't as pointedly partisan or maybe as aggressive, maybe that's a better word, as Attorney General Josh Call's speech. He really went after some of the lame duck actions that lawmakers took in December to limit the power of the governor and the attorney general. And that definitely livened up the crowd a little bit.
It did, yeah. Mm-hmm. They liked that. Mm-hmm. And he also talked about how his, the Department of Justice is going to be different. Mm-hmm. And talked about some of the priorities that he had too, right? Mm-hmm. Universal background checks got a big round of applause.
A red flag law for people can call out someone that they believe shouldn't have a gun and report them and have their gun ownership rights taken away if they think they're going to be a danger to themselves or others.
the Evers speech was very much, let's find areas of common ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which we kind of knew he was going to say. That's what he...
Not an unfamiliar theme from him.
It's not an unfamiliar theme from him. There's a little bit of here's what my priorities are, and they would be priorities that are different from Republicans, but not a whole lot of it. It was mostly, let's work together, we can get along, you know, we're bigger than partisan fights.
Mm-hmm.
What about Mandela Barnes' speech, the lieutenant governor?
The speech didn't stand out to me too much. I mean, he did say something, he did kind of give a nod to Milwaukee in a way, and, you know, that, you know, your zip code shouldn't determine, I wish I had the direct quote in front of me, but like, you know, your...
The zip code.
Your place
in
this world shouldn't be
in.
Like, yeah, to be determined by your zip code.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, I thought Barnes seemed kind of moved by the whole moment. He is, mm-hmm. I mean, it was history there. He's the state's first African-American lieutenant governor. He's a young statewide office holder. There are pictures also, you and I talked about this, where he's looking at Tony Evers. I think those guys really like each other. Is the impression I get between Barnes and Evers, kind of admiring one another, you know, like, oh, buddy.
Here we are.
Yeah,
the big day.
I think he even said at some point, like, gave a shout out to, you know, I wouldn't have had this opportunity to, you know, meet Tony Evers as a friend if we hadn't, you know, been on this ticket and traveled the state together and such.
There you go.
Yeah. I think he also mentioned what his priorities are going to be in the office, and that's something that the lieutenant governor kind of gets to set.
Because the office has no responsibilities other than your governor if the governor is not governor.
Right. So you sort of like you set your own agenda and you have specific things you want to work on. And he said he wants to work on equity across the state, and a little bit of a nod to his background and, you know, as you mentioned, being the first African-American lieutenant governor. So... It's kind of
didn't make the montage, but we also had a new treasurer and a new Secretary of State sworn in, Sarah Godlewski, the
new
treasurer.
Not a new Secretary of State.
No, not a new Secretary of State.
Re-sworn in.
Yes. Doug LaFollette. I wonder if every inauguration is as special as the last for him, because he's been through a few of them. But it was first for Sarah Godlewski. Also seemed to be like a crowd favorite among this Democratic crowd there.
Mm-hmm.
But two more offices that don't have many responsibilities. So then we heard all these calls in the legislature too for bipartisanship.
Mm-hmm.
They have this big event. They all say we're going to try and work together. And then lawmakers also got sworn in, and there was talk there too of, you know, maybe we can do things together. We can find common ground.
I didn't hear much of the assembly version. I was in the Senate. A couple short speeches from Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling and Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. What was it like in the assembly?
So Speaker Voss, the thing that stuck out to me about his speech was this extended analogy he had of driving. It really carried through a lot of the speech. So he talked about how the state of Wisconsin has been driving along in the right lane for the past 8 years, and that a lot of people might want them to swerve the car to the far left lane, but they're not going to do that, and people are going to have to be content driving down the middle. So there's a little partisan driving analogy for you.
We're assuming that this is like a multi-lane road. It's not just a two-lane road.
Right.
We're not going to...
Insert road construction funding joke here.
Drive on the double yellow line the entire way these next 4 years.
Drive off-roading down the
I feel like that would be apt. Like this budget will be a game of chicken between the legislature and the executive.
But
buckle up.
He also talked about how some people want lawmakers to give the steering wheel to Governor Evers and sort of let him, you know, get in the back seat and let the governor drive. And he's like, that's not going to happen. So,
well, this kept going, huh?
It did. It was, I said at the beginning, this was an extended analogy. There was a lot.
And before we park at the end of the day, let me leave you with this.
Yeah. So he talked about that. He talked about sort of if we want to get things done, we're going to have to be more bipartisan. And Senator Fitzgerald said that too. He's like, people are going to have to get used to the fact that things are going to move more slowly than we're used to, than we've gotten used to in the past 8 years with one party controlling everything.
Okay, and then Voss went beyond that and had a press conference where he said, here's a list of things we can be bipartisan about, too.
Mm-hmm.
What was on that list?
So this was a letter that Assembly Republicans wrote and delivered, hand-delivered to the governor this week. And it had a variety of things on it. They said that they met in caucus and came up with this list, not an exhaustive list, but a number of things that they thought they could agree on. Some of the things are ones that we've become pretty familiar with in terms of, you know, these are bipartisan ideas or areas for cooperation. One of them, the road funding debate. Another, a state law to guarantee coverage, health insurance coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. They talked about fighting homelessness in Wisconsin. That's something that Assembly Republicans or the Assembly had a task force on during the last legislative session. They said they want to do some more on that. Expanding high-speed internet, broadband to rural parts of the state, protecting groundwater, and increasing access to affordable child care. Just kind of rattling down the list there.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, thanks.
And but what struck me is that it kind of from there, the bipartisanship ends like pretty. There's like a cliff. Like this is stuff we can be bipartisanship on. Well, what about the accepting the federal Medicaid money, which the governor has talked about at every stop on his campaign and his like one of his number one priorities is like, no, that would be a far left Democratic proposal.
Deal breaker.
And we can't do that. I mean, there's no hint from the speaker that that's going to be something that they would go along with.
Right. So he sort of laid out all of these things that he believes lawmakers and the governor could work together on. And then in the question and answer session after, reporters were asking Speaker Voss about the budget process and whether Assembly Republicans would work from Governor Evers' budget versus a base budget. This is something we've talked a little bit about in the past. Senator Fitzgerald has talked about working from a base budget instead of the governor's budget. Speaker Voss said, hey, I'd really love to work from Governor Evers' budget, but he needs to not include some things that he knows we're not going to approve. He said, if he includes the Medicaid expansion in his budget, that's a deal breaker. Like, we're not going to accept that expansion. I don't know why he'd put it in the budget when he knows we're not going to do that. And he also talked about another kind of deal breaker that the governor might put in his budget, something he's talked about, which is a change to the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit. This is a program that Republicans have been really supportive of in recent years, created under the Walker administration. And Governor Evers has said that he might pay for some different programs in state government by changing the tax structure for the top earners that get this tax credit. And Speaker Voss said that's if he does that, that is a huge tax increase. And he knows that we are not going to increase taxes. No new taxes, read my lips, whatever, insert line here about not increasing taxes. And he said that's not going to happen. That's a deal breaker. So if the governor includes those two things, essentially this sort of spirit of bipartisanship that I want to work from is tarnished.
Well, that the agriculture and manufacturer's tax credit, wasn't that how he was going to pay for tax cuts for the middle class? One of the things that ostensibly was like on their list of, you know, we can do these things together things?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I didn't mention that before, the income tax cut. That was on their list of things that we could get along with the governor on. The governor during his campaign talked about a 10% income tax cut for middle and low income families in Wisconsin. Republicans have said they're open to that. And the governor did say that one of the ways he might be able to pay for that was changing that top tier of the man and ag tax credit. So if they want to cut that income tax without changing the man and ag tax credit, they're going to have to find that money somewhere else.
It sounds like what's shaping up to me is they're not going to have, you know, what Speaker Voss identifies as a bipartisan relationship. If that's what he needs to see from the governor in order to feel bipartisanship, I just don't think it's going to happen.
Because
I don't think I'm out on a
major tenets of his
campaign, I mean,
right?
It would be like Evers saying, remember the number one thing I talked about on my campaign with accepting the federal Medicaid money? I'm not going to do that because Speaker Voss is telling me not to do it. I just can't imagine it happening. And I don't think I'm out on a limb here. And so I think you're going to have, I mean, if that's what it takes to sort of trigger a response budget from Republican lawmakers, it just feels like this is a year that's setting up where Evers presents his budget and then they kind of do their own thing and then end up, you know, sending that to him and he vetoes a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Save this tape and we'll review it in October when the budget's done to see if I was right.
Evers made some more comments about vetoing the budget recently, didn't he?
Yeah, he said to AP, like, he wouldn't rule out vetoing the whole budget.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would veto the whole budget. It's a thing governors say.
Again, we'll revisit this tape.
Yeah, see, we should bookmark this one for us.
Yeah.
A very special about that thing we said.
Yeah.
Post-budget edition. How many times were we wrong about the budget? But I feel like I see it shaping up this way. Also, some fighting among legislators already. It seems like between Speaker Voss and Minority Leader Gordon Hintz for Democrats mm-hmm. in the Assembly. They had a relationship in the Assembly in the past, really under Speaker Voss's speakership, where the Republicans and Democrats come up with a memorandum of understanding on time limits for Assembly debate.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like procedural stuff.
Yeah, it's probably pretty boring to everybody who's not like affected by it. But for people who work in the building, it's like, oh, how long is the debate going to last? Mm-hmm. And like, oh, we set aside 10 hours of debate. It has, for the most part, prevented those overnight marathon sessions in the Assembly. And so the Speaker wanted that to happen again, and Hintz would not go along with it this time. And now there's a fight over staff in the Assembly where the Speaker has increased his staff and Assembly Democrats are not getting additional staff.
Mm-hmm.
And Hintz told the Journal Sentinel it was because Voss wanted to make those staff contingent upon all Democrats voting for Voss as Speaker in a ceremonial vote. Basically, I mean, it's not a ceremonial vote. It is the vote that determines the Speaker at the beginning of session. But it, as a gesture of bipartisanship, sometimes the minority party will say, we also vote for you as Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because we know we're not going to have the votes to defeat you. So,
yeah,
spirit of bipartisanship will.
And they didn't do that this time.
Mm-mm.
So.
And Speaker Voss was not happy about that.
He was not. In the post assembly session press conference, he had some very critical things to say about Hintz. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's shaping up so bipartisan. There is going to be a hearing on that pre-existing conditions bill next week. And again, I don't think that's going to be a very bipartisan hearing, because what Republicans want from that pre-existing conditions protection at the state level is not what the Affordable Care Act currently offers. And so while that lawsuit to overturn the ACA is still ongoing to replace it with the state law, I just don't think that's where Democrats are at.
So getting back to New Kids on the Block, I'm thinking of John and Joey and Danny and Steve and Phil and
Danny, Donnie, Joe, John, Jordan.
Well, they do these complicated dance routines.
Yeah, they do.
And
super complicated.
I was reminded of those dance routines when there was all sorts of legal maneuvering going on this week. Do we want to talk about that, guys?
That's a much more palatable way to think about.
Why is John
legal
not talking? I'm wondering. And it's like, oh, he's thinking about the next transition and how we can link it to New Kids on the Block.
Why is John talking?
All right.
Because I keep us on the rails, guys. This is my job.
Cool.
Lawsuits.
Yeah. We got a few now.
Yeah.
We're not looking. These are looking back at the extraordinary session. There's basically the way that I, at least by my math, there's like four attempts to thwart some piece of the extraordinary session or the lame duck session that happened in December. One of the newest things that happened this week was we have our first full-fledged lawsuit in state court.
Mm-hmm.
And this lawsuit, which is being filed by a group of plaintiffs that includes the League of Women Voters, among others, basically says that the entire extraordinary session was not authorized by the Constitution. And anything they passed has to be thrown out. And it's saying that you know, you can't have extraordinary sessions in Wisconsin. That is, it's a procedural argument that the state constitution says you that the legislature can meet at times prescribed by law, can meet in a special session, which is called by the governor. And if you look at the history of special sessions in Wisconsin, they go back, you know, beyond a century, right? That has been the tool that has typically been used when the legislature's not in regular session. But starting in about, I learned this week, I didn't know how frequently extraordinary sessions had been used. We had a first one in Wisconsin in 1980, and there's been like two dozen since. So it's not something that has been used a whole lot in state history. And this lawsuit is saying you can't do it. So anything that was passed in extraordinary session
over the last 40 years.
So I asked that of the plaintiff attorney, and he said, like, no, look, we're focused on this extraordinary session. So we're not
looking to undo laws that were made in 1980.
He didn't say anything more.
Yeah.
But it is sort of an interesting thought exercise, right? Like, oh, what happened in the 1993 extraordinary session?
Yeah.
But it's kind of a simple argument at its core. It's filed in Dane County Circuit Court. Democrats have had pretty good luck in Dane County Circuit Court when it comes to challenging other Walker or Republican initiatives over the past 8 years. It would eventually be appealed to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, where conservatives hold a 4-3 majority and have at times given the legislature broad leeway on procedural challenges. I'm thinking of the Act 10 challenge, where plaintiffs tried to block Act 10 from happening because it was in an open meetings lawsuit. And it was pretty dramatic. The circuit court went along with it. The state Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. You can't usurp the power of the legislature. So I could imagine justices there saying something similar on this one if it were to get there. But maybe, get a little bit ahead of ourselves. Save this podcast for and about that thing we said months later. Another thing that was filed this week or going to be filed was from State Representative Jimmy Anderson. Laurelis is a representative you have profiled and covered in the past. And his complaint, speaking of the open meetings challenges.
Yeah. He basically said that the extraordinary session that went overnight and into the wee hours of the next morning violated the open meetings requirements of the state because he wasn't able to attend due to his disability.
Yeah, Jimmy Anderson is in a wheelchair. He is paralyzed from the chest down, and he said that he kept checking with legislative leaders about when this vote was going to happen because he couldn't stay in the assembly chamber all night. And so he missed the vote when it happened. I mean, nobody knew when that vote was going to happen. They convened on December 4th in the morning, and it happened sometime December 5th, in the wee hours in the morning. And so that's also headed to Dane County. I think that's being filed with the Dane County District Attorney and be up to him to decide whether to pursue that. What else?
So that's two of the four.
That's two. Okay. The third we've talked about before. This is the federal lawsuit involving the early voting changes. The case that you covered, they're basically going back to court and saying, hey, judge, remember when you struck down early voting restrictions in Wisconsin? They just passed this new law that's almost exactly like what you struck down. So no developments in that case as we podcast here right now. And then the fourth thing, this one's mysterious. Tony Evers said this week that he's going to send a letter to Josh Call to change the stance of the state of Wisconsin in that lawsuit that seeks to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Because remember, this was one of Tony Evers' big priorities in the campaign, Josh Call's big priorities in the campaign. We're going to get Wisconsin out of this multi-state lawsuit to overturn the ACA. And then the lame duck session happened, and they passed a restriction that says, no, governor, can't just do that. You got to bring it to the Joint Finance Committee first.
You have to get approval from the legislature.
The legislature is run by Republicans, and they support this lawsuit. So I don't know what Tony Evers means by that, changing the stance of the lawsuit. Just in case something happens today, maybe we should throw this to future John for an update on what Tony Evers meant when he said, we're going to change the stance of Wisconsin's lawsuit. Future John.
From the future, there is nothing to report.
Thanks for that report, Future John. Your insight is always invaluable to this podcast. I mean, what would we do without your forward-looking view of the news? You know things we can't know.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Such an asset, Future John.
Well, here in the present, I think that does it for us. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If you're looking for the right stuff, well, we got it. And all you have to do to get it is subscribe for new episodes of the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes. You can also find it on Google Play and Stitcher, as well as many other fine podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.